Good afternoon. The Secretary General will preview the meeting of NATO defence ministers and then he'll have time for some questions. Secretary General.
Good afternoon. Tomorrow, NATO defence ministers will meet to address the most serious security crisis we have faced in Europe for decades. There are signs from Moscow that diplomacy should continue. This gives grounds for cautious optimism. But so far, we have not seen any sign of de-escalation on the ground. Russia has amassed a fighting force in and around Ukraine, unprecedented since the Cold War. Everything is now in place for a new attack. But Russia still has time to step back from the brink, stop preparing for war, and start working for a peaceful solution. NATO allies have been very clear that any further Russian aggression against Ukraine would come at a high price. We have systematically exposed Russia's actions, plans, and disinformation to lay bare to the world what Russia is doing and to make it harder for Russia to conduct aggressive actions. At the same time, NATO allies remain ready to engage with Russia. On the 26th of January, I invited Russia to a series of meetings in the NATO-Russia Council. We sent concrete proposals for a substantive agenda to listen to the Russian concerns, share ours, and look for common ground. We are ready to discuss NATO-Russia relations, European security, including the situation in and around Ukraine, and risk reduction, transparency, and arms control. But we will not compromise on our core principles. Every nation has the right to choose its own path. And there will never be first-class and second-class members of NATO. We are all NATO allies. We have stepped up deterrence and defence across the lines to remove any room for misunderstanding or miscalculation. We have deployed more troops, planes and ships to the eastern part of the lines, increased the readiness of our NATO response force, and boosted our battle groups in the Baltic region. Just last week, I was in Romania to meet additional US troops deploying together with other allies. A strong demonstration of US commitment to the defence of Europe, from the Black Sea and to the Baltic. NATO defence ministers will address the need to further increase our defensive posture. And I welcome the offer by France to lead a new NATO battlegroup in Romania. Tomorrow, I also chair a regular meeting of the Nuclear Planning Group, ensuring that our nuclear deterrent remains safe, secure, and effective. Defence ministers will meet our colleagues from Ukraine and Georgia to discuss the worsening security situation in the Black Sea region, and NATO allies will reaffirm our strong support for both countries' sovereignty and territorial integrity. We will also meet with our partners Finland, Sweden and the European Union to continue our close consultations and further strengthen NATO-EU cooperation. The current crisis has shown once again how important it is to invest in our defence. So ministers will review burden sharing across the alliance. I welcome that our latest figures show 7 consecutive years of increased defence spending across Europe and Canada, with 270 billion dollars extra since 2014. And I encourage allies to continue to invest in our shared security. Finally, we will also discuss NATO's next strategic concept, which will be adopted at the Madrid summit in June. I am confident that allies will recommit to our core values and the importance of Europe and North America standing together. And with that, I'm ready to take your questions.
Okay. We'll go to Reuters, up there.
Thank you. Thank you, Wanda. So Russia has said it is returning some troops to their to bases after military exercises were completed. Are you saying then that this isn't true, or that you're not seeing any kind of change on the ground? Thank you.
So far, we have not seen any de-escalation on the ground, not seen any signs of reduced Russian military presence on the borders of Ukraine. But we will continue to monitor and to follow closely what Russia is doing. And the signs coming from Moscow about a willingness to continue to engage in diplomatic efforts, that gives some reason for cautious optimism. But we will, of course, follow very closely what's happening on the ground and whether this is reflected in some real de-escalation of the Russian military build-up in and around Ukraine.
Okay, we'll go to NPR.
Hi, thank you. Terry Schultz with NPR. Secretary, hi. Over here. Would it really matter if some of the troops are returning to their garrisons? I mean, this may not be a sign of de-escalation when you have, you know, more than 100 BTGs and more than 100,000 troops, just to follow up on Robin's question. But additionally, there, Foreign Minister Lavrov said yesterday that Russia had prepared its response to the U.S. and NATO. Have you received any such response? Thank you.
No, we have not received any response from Russia yet. We will welcome a response. We sent them in January our proposals, quite substantive proposals, in parallel the United States and NATO, where we outlined a wide range of issues, topics, where we are ready to sit down and look for common ground on arms control, missiles, transparency on military activities and many other areas. And we are ready. We have been ready for a long time, and we remain ready to engage in good faith in dialogue with Russia to find a political solution. Of course, what we have seen on the ground, actually since last spring, is that they are moving forces around, but that doesn't represent a real de-escalation. And we've also seen that sometimes they move into a position with combat-ready troops and a lot of heavy equipment. And then they take out some of, or perhaps even most of the troops, but they leave the equipment behind. And then they can very quickly reinforce and move all the people back, all the troops back again if needed. So the movement of forces, the movement of Russian capabilities doesn't represent real de-escalation. But we will monitor, we will follow what they are doing, and of course we call on them to de-escalate, to withdraw troops, because the Russian military build-up in and around Ukraine is unprecedented, not only with a high number of combat-ready troops, but all the support, all the combat enablers they need to actually conduct a full-fledged invasion of Ukraine. And with all these forces, all these capabilities in place, Russia can conduct an invasion of Ukraine with very little or hardly any warning time at all. So we follow this, but at the same time, we believe there is some ground for cautious optimism based on the signs coming from Moscow that they are interested in continuing diplomatic efforts and to sit down with NATO and NATO allies to find a political solution.
Okay, we'll go to Interfax Ukraine.
Thank you, Anna. Interfax Ukraine, Irina Sommer. Secretary General, two questions, if I may. First one, can you please give more details about upcoming meeting with Ukrainian Minister of Defense, in which format it will be, when it will be, what do you expect from Ukrainian side? And second question is, being under a threat of possible war, don't you think that NATO might review Bucharest decision regarding Ukraine? Or in other words, maybe it's easier to give up Ukraine. Thank you.
I look very much forward to the meeting with the Ukrainian defense minister, also together with the defense minister of Georgia. The two defense ministers will meet all 30 NATO defense ministers. This will take place on Thursday. And it is yet another sign of the very close and highly valued partnership we have with Ukraine and the strong support that allies provide to Ukraine. In the meeting, I expect the ministers to once again express their political support to Ukraine, the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Ukraine. And as you know, NATO provides support with the capacity building. We help to modernize Ukraine's defense and security institutions. I guess that will be, I expect that to be addressed during the meeting. And we also help with cyber defense. And then, of course, on top of what NATO do together, several NATO allies provide also bilateral support to Ukraine. So the political, the practical support to Ukraine will be addressed in the meeting. Then I think also it will be an opportunity for all of us to take stock. Are there any signs that things are moving in the right direction, or is the military build-up in and around continue, or does it continue? So I think it's a bit early to preempt the exact outcome of that discussion, but it is important that when things are so challenging and when tensions are as high as they are now, it is important that we consult closely with close partners, with Ukraine, and that's exactly what we do. Let me also add that we are in regular contact with Ukrainian leadership in different formats almost all the time. I've spoken several times with President Zelensky, and we continue to be in close contact with the government of Ukraine.
We'll go to Frankfurt.
Oh, yeah, sorry. No. The Bucharest decision stands. NATO strongly believe that all nations have the right to choose their own path, and NATO's door remains open. The enlargement of NATO has been a great success. It helps to spread democracy, freedom, and ensure peace and stability across Europe for decades. So that decision stands.
Okay, we'll get to Frankfurter Allgemeine Zeitung. Yeah, gentleman over there with glasses. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Secretary General, over the past days, France has indicated that it no longer considers or would no longer consider the NATO-Russia Founding Act valid in case of an invasion. Do you expect a discussion on the NATO-Russia Founding Act in that respect during the defense ministerial? And do you sense a change among member states which decided after the 2014 annexation of Crimea that they still be bound by this basic act? Thanks a lot.
A Russian invasion of Ukraine will be a blatant violation of the NATO-Russia Founding Act. But that has happened before. But NATO allies are still committed to the Founding Act. We believe in the importance of respecting all our international obligations, including the Founding Act. And we have seen before that Russia has violated the Founding Act by invading Ukraine by using military force against Ukraine and illegally annexing Crimea. But we still believe in the importance of the Founding Act, and I also like to add that that we strongly also believe in the dual track approach, that we need dialogue, we need to talk to Russia, but at the same time we need strength and deterrence and defence, and that remains NATO's position. Yeah.
Okay. Associated Press.
Lorne Cook from the Associated Press. You spoke before just on the troop movements about the different types of things that Russia's been moving in recent weeks. You spoke about fighter jets, about S-400s and so on, then more recently about the enablers, about medical centres, logistics, command and control and so on. When it comes to the things that Russia is talking about withdrawing today, do you see any substance in that, anything significant that might impact its ability to invade Ukraine? And if I could also just ask you very briefly, during the last few months, has there ever been a direct and probable security threat to a NATO ally?
So far, we have not seen any de-escalation on the ground from the Russian side. Over the last weeks and days, we have seen the opposite, a continued military build-up with more troops, more battle groups, more high-end capabilities, artillery, air defense, missiles, and a lot of support elements that makes it possible for Russia to move into Ukraine for a full-fledged invasion or a more limited military incursion with hardly any warning time at all. That picture has not changed so far, but we monitor, we follow what they do, and we believe there is some ground for cautious optimism based on the signals and signs coming from Moscow that they're ready to continue to engage in a diplomatic effort, and we are ready to continue to engage in a diplomatic effort. It's too early to say, but since we so strongly believe in the need for a political solution, of course we will now really look into whether there is a possibility to create a framework for meaningful dialogue with Russia. I welcome the different formats. We need a NATO-Russia Council. We need the bilateral talks between different NATO allies. We need a Normandy format to engage with Russia. And I also welcome the efforts by many NATO allied leaders meeting with President Putin, engaging with Russia. We have Chancellor Olaf Scholz in Moscow today. Last week, President Macron. Of course, President Biden has been in contact with President Putin. So has Prime Minister Boris Johnson and others. So there are many efforts from NATO and NATO allies to engage with Russia. We hope that we will receive an answer from Russia soon, an answer to our letter, to our proposals, where we invited them to sit down in a series of meeting and outlined the topics we are ready to discuss. It's too early to say whether we can see anything on the ground, but I will tell you, or at least we may, let's come back to what we tell you when, but at least we are following very closely what they are doing.
Okay, lady in red then.
Sorry. What we see is a serious build-up in and around Ukraine, and I think also the fact that we have increased the NATO presence in the eastern part of the alliance sends a very clear message to any potential adversary that we are there to defend and protect all allies. And I've seen that myself. The battle groups, I visited them in just before Christmas in Latvia and Lithuania, and then on Friday, I was in Romania, and the fact that we have deployed more NATO troops on the ground, more naval assets, more aircraft, All of that sends a very clear message. So we are there to protect and defend all allies, and I think there is no room for any miscalculation in Moscow about our commitment to defending allies. So we have to understand that Ukraine is a partner. We support Ukraine, but for all NATO allies, we provide 100% security guarantees, and we have demonstrated that commitment also with more North American presence in Europe over the last weeks.
Okay. We'll go to the lady with the red scarf then.
Natalia Drozdiak from Bloomberg. I just had a follow-up to my colleague's question. Could you be a bit more precise about what the start of de-escalation would look like? I mean, how many troops would have to pull back? And to what extent do you see this Russia's new force posture as a long-term formation there? Thank you.
So what you have to see is, of course, a substantial withdrawal of troops, but not only troops, also equipment. Because what we saw this spring was that they moved in with troops and heavy equipment. And very often it takes much more time to move the heavy equipment than to move in and out the troops and the soldiers. What we have seen before is that they go in with heavy equipment and troops, take up out some troops, and then they can easily move them back in again after just a few days on very short notice. So what we need to see is a significant and enduring withdrawal of forces, troops, and not least the heavy equipment. But I think also we need to understand that what we have seen over in reality, the last year, because this actually started last spring, and then they have gone up and down with a so upward trend all the time, will have a lasting impact on the security situation in Europe. And that's also why NATO is not only responding to the current crisis in around Ukraine by increasing our presence in the eastern part of the alliance, but we are also going to consider more long-term adjustment to our posture in the East, including with considering the establishment of a battle group, for instance, in Romania, and I welcome the offer by France to lead that battle group. So I think you need to distinguish between different things. NATO has, since 2014, increased our presence in the eastern part of the alliance because of Russia's aggressive actions against Ukraine with the illegal annexation of Crimea. And that has taken place over many years with the battle groups, with the new command structure, with more naval and air presence, but also then in the last weeks and months, we responded to the current crisis by increasing our presence, and then we are looking at a more long-term adjustment, but that will be something we will take decisions on later on.
Okay, we'll go to Politico.
Thanks very much, David Herzenhorn with Politico. Secretary General, at the start of the Olympics, we saw quite a striking joint statement from Russia and China against NATO expansion. I wonder if you assess that one outcome of this crisis is stronger unity between Russia and China against the alliance. Would this have happened if leaders hadn't turned to the China issue at last year's summit? I know the strategic concept you said would address Russia more than it had before and China more than it had before. Does it need to address now Russia and China together?
So first of all, NATO has to respond to reality. And the reality is that China and Russia has come closer and closer over the last years. They are exercising together. They are working more closely together in the diplomatic domain in the UN Security Council. But we also see how they conduct more and more exercises. They have done that over the last years, including recently with a joint exercise with Iran in the Indian Ocean. So, of course, these are realities that have taken place over some time, and they impact our security. So there is no way we can deny or, in a way, not take that into account. And that's exactly what NATO has done over the last years, especially since our summit in last summer, where we for the first time had some substantial language on the security consequences of China for our security. But We are ready to also engage with China. We need dialogue. We need to address arms control, big issues like also climate change and many other issues. And that's exactly what we are doing. But knowing that, for instance, China is now rapidly developing new nuclear capabilities, long-range missiles, hypersonic missiles. Of course, that matter and missiles that can reach all NATO territory. There is no way we cannot take that into account. Not least because we see that China is coming closer to us in cyberspace, in the Arctic, in Africa, and also trying to to control critical infrastructure. I think what fundamentally what we see is that two authoritarian powers, Russia and China, are operating together because they don't like a rules-based international order. They don't share our values, freedom, democracy. And that's also the reason why they try to deny sovereign democratic nations the right to choose their own future. They want a world where big powers can decide what smaller powers and countries can do. So this is about fundamental principles, whether free, independent countries can choose to be part of an alliance as NATO, or they can choose to stay out. We should respect it anyway. And NATO respect sovereign democratic decisions by Finland and Sweden to not apply for membership, or by Ukraine to apply for membership. This is their sovereign democratic decisions, and we respect them. But Russia and China do not. They have stated clearly in a joint statement that they don't want countries in the world to have that freedom to make their own decisions on their own future. And that just demonstrates a fundamental difference when it comes to values and what kind of world we'd like to live in. I would like to live in a world where we have free democratic nations living in a world with a world order and where rule of law is what we have to abide to, not spheres of influence where big powers decide what neighbours can do.
We'll go to Imedi.
Thank you, Anna. Mr. Secretary General, what can you tell us about the meeting with Georgian Defence Minister? You spoke about Ukraine, and can you tell us more about it? And also, last week during the press conference here in this room, Polish President said that they asked for a high-level meeting with Ukraine and Georgia in Madrid. What do you think about these ideas? Thank you so much.
So first of all, I look very much forward to the meeting with the Georgian Defence Minister. It reflects the close partnership, the important partnership we have with Georgia. We have just stepped up our cooperation in different ways. We have activities together. We will have also an exercise together. And there are other ways of demonstrating how NATO and Georgia are working closely together. And we continue to provide support to the reform efforts, and we continue to, of course, support the territorial integrity and sovereignty of Georgia. So this is part of the regular, important, close coordination between Georgia and NATO, and I look forward to the meeting.
Well,
that's too early to say the different formats of the Madrid summit, so we have to come back to that.
We'll try to take a couple of questions online before coming back to the press room. So I'll go to VG Alfbjerne Jonsson.
Hi, thank you, Mrs. Stoltenberg. I would like to ask you about the unprecedented public sharing of intelligence during this month, specifically from the US. And latest about the possible invasion tomorrow on Wednesday. Is this open sharing a new tool for NATO or for allied meant for deterrence? And can you tell us whether, in your opinion, if it had any effect on Russia?
We have systematically shared information about the Russian plans, the Russian capabilities, and the Russian attempts to stage a pretext for aggressive actions against Ukraine, what is often referred to as false flag operations. And we do so because we believe in transparency, but also because we believe that that makes it harder for Russia to conduct aggressive actions against Ukraine. So to lay bare everything they do is a way also to increase the threshold for them to invade Ukraine, to send in forces, to try to organize riots, topple the government, or all the other things that we are afraid that Russia may try to do. So the fact that we do this is a way also to try to counter and to prevent these things from happening. So I think we have to understand that intelligence is not always a prediction. Intelligence is information, and when we share information, it is actually an effort to try to prevent things from happening which would have otherwise happened. So, yes, we do this in an attempt to to prevent aggressive actions against Ukraine.
Okay, we'll go to DPA, Ella Joyner.
Hi there, thanks for taking my question. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Great, thank you. Basically, I'm inferring from your comments that you have no plans to step back from building up NATO's presence in the eastern flank. If you did see a significant and enduring withdrawal, would you then consider reversing those plans to increase NATO's presence in its eastern flank? Thank you very much.
So NATO is a defensive alliance. Everything we do is defensive, and it's about protecting and defending NATO allies. Second, we have had an increased presence of NATO in the eastern part of the alliance since 2014. It started in 2014 because of Russia's illegal annexation of Crimea and because of Russia's continued efforts to destabilize Ukraine, including by supporting the separatists in Donbas. So this has been there now for many years, and that has triggered the defensive response from NATO in the eastern part of the alliance. Then, over the last couple of months and weeks, we have seen that some of this presence has been enhanced, boosted, because we have seen a very current challenge in and around Ukraine. We will assess and we will judge the need to maintain that. It depends on what's happening in and around Ukraine. But it's too early, in a way, to speculate, because so far we have not seen any de-escalation by Russia, and we speak about well over 100,000 troops, combat-ready troops, also close to... they are close to Ukraine, on the Ukrainian borders, but they're also close to NATO territory, not least Poland, some of the Baltic countries bordering Ukraine, and of course bordering Belarus. So we will make judgment decisions based on what Russia actually do. But I think also that we need to understand that there will most likely be some long-term consequences, some long-term deterioration of the security environment in Europe, of this significant Russian military build-up, the threatening rhetoric. So we are also then assessing whether we should have some more longer-term adjustments or presence in the eastern part of the alliance.
And we'll take a final question from Zoom. Robert Lupitu from Calea Europeană.
Thank you very much. Mr. Secretary General, today the Romanian Defense Ministry has announced that Romania has completed the necessary operations to declare the initial operational capability of the NATO battle group. I want to ask you, how soon can this battle group be up and running? And what troops do you expect it to be installed over there? Thank you.
I will not preempt any decisions by ministers. I met with President Klaus Johannes on Friday, and we discussed the battle group. I also discussed this with President Macron, and I expressed my support and that I welcome the French offer to lead a battle group in Romania. It will take some time before we have all the decisions in place, and also some time to have command and control and all the other issues that has to be decided before a battle group potentially is stationed in Romania. But then I think it is important to remember that while we are working on this issue of a French-led battle group in Romania, it doesn't mean that we do not do anything. So just over the last few days, the United States has added 1,000 troops to their presence in Romania. So that adds to the place, also that's in, to the 1,000 they already had. So that's just that is 2,000. The United States have made it clear that that's not necessarily a permanent presence, but it is a significant reinforcement of NATO presence in Romania, which has already taken place. I saw, you know, the Stryker units coming into Romania, coming into Constanza, and there are more US planes, there are more German, Italian, and other allies have also stepped up. So I think we have to distinguish between the more imminent need for more troops and forces, for instance, in Romania. We have already deployed more troops and forces to Romania, and I welcome the United States and others. And then distinguish that, or to separate that from the issue of more long-term adjustment, and the question of a battle group is a more long-term adjustment of our presence in Romania and the rest of the eastern part of the alliance.
Okay, we'll come back here to Ukraine Forum.
Dmitry Shkurko, National News Agency of Ukraine here. Russian rhetoric was accompanied by some quite aggressive decisions by the State Duma, which is suggested to President Putin to recognize the independence of so-called Donetsk and Luhansk republics. I understand it is not a purely NATO issue, but as NATO is going to intensify the negotiations with Russia, how that move would impact them? And the second question, if I may, have you received from Russian side any response to your proposal to conduct and to hold the next NRC meeting? Thank you.
To answer the last question first, we have not received any response from Russia on our proposal to both convene a series of meetings in the NATO-Russia Council. We had one meeting in January. It lasted for 4 hours. It was, challenging but also very important meeting because we were together there, Russia and all NATO allies, and discussing and addressing Ukraine, the security implications of the military build-up by Russia in Ukraine. I think that in itself was of great importance. But we have not received any response from Russia on our invitation to hold additional meetings on the NATO-Russia Council, and we have not received any response from Russia on our written proposals on the different topic subjects that we are ready to discuss with Russia. We look forward and we welcome a response from Russia, and let's then see what kind of response we will get. On the question of a Russian recognition of the so-called republics, People's Republics of Donetsk and Luhansk, well, if that happens, that will be a blatant violation of Ukraine's territorial integrity and sovereignty once again. Because there is no doubt that Donetsk and Luhansk is part of Ukraine within international recognized borders. So such a recognition will be a violation of international law and the territorial integrity and sovereignty of Ukraine. Not only that, it will also be a violation of the Minsk agreements. So it will make it even harder to find a political solution based on the Minsk agreements. And NATO and I support the efforts of the within the Normandy format of France and Germany to find a political solution within the Normandy format. And of course, a recognition of these two territories as some kind of independent entities will totally undermine these efforts and violate the Minsk agreements.
Thank you very much. This concludes this press conference. We will see you tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you so much.